Music Theater of Madison presents 10 Days in a Madhouse, a podcast and workshop of a new musical by Jennifer Hedstrom and Karen Sari, commissioned and directed by Megan Randolph and Music Theater of Madison. 10 Days in a Madhouse is about journalist Nellie Bly's time at Blackwell's Island Insane Asylum. In 1887, the groundbreaking journalist got herself committed in order to expose the atrocities taking place. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our podcast sponsors, the Frank Young Fund for New Musicals through the National Alliance for Musical Theater. The Frank Young Fund provides grants for new musicals in all stages of development at theaters across the country. You can learn more at namt.org. We are also supported by Dane Arts, who work to amplify Dane County's meaningful cultural legacy through a variety of activities, and you can learn more about them at danearts.com. We are also sponsored by Orange Tree Imports, a local shop for fun gifts, seasonal delights, and kitchen tools. Go to orangetreeimports.com to learn about what they have to offer. This episode of our podcast is sponsored by TDS Custom Construction. Since 1985, they have designed and built energy-efficient and sustainable structures with a core commitment to environmental stewardship. Learn more at tdscustomconstruction.com. We are looking for your feedback as we move to the final stage of this musical. Please visit mtmadison.com to fill out our feedback form. This is an important part of the workshop process, and on our website you can also see renderings of the costumes by Shannon Hebler and the set by Aaron Ball. You'll also find info on the actors in our virtual program, resources on Nellie Bly, and more. Music Theater of Madison is a 14-year-old professional musical theater company in Madison, Wisconsin. We focus on the new and different in musical theater. We know it's a tough time for a lot of people, but if you're able, we'd be very grateful for a donation to help sustain MTM's programming as we look to a future that's very different from what we'd imagined, but no less exciting. You can make a contribution at mtmadison.com, and every dollar counts. Well, hello, here we are back again. It's been actually 2 months, believe it or not, since Trinity and Karen and I and Jennifer gathered to talk about Music Theater of Madison's 10 Days in a Madhouse, and it's been 2.5 months since we made that podcast, which was crazy, but I think turned out really, really well. Today, we are here with some distinguished panelists who I invited for various reasons to give us a little bit of feedback. It's, you know, it's tough to kind of give feedback and get feedback at this point, the way that we're all not connected and the way that we're experiencing things differently. So I thought of three people who I knew could give us some really strong information. And so I will let them introduce themselves. But first, let's introduce the core team here. So my name is Megan Randolph, and I'm the director and producer of the show and the executive director of Music Theater of Madison. And we have Karen Sari.
Hello, everyone.
Karen is our book writer and co-lyricist. We have Jennifer Hedstrom.
Hello.
Hello. She is our composer and co-lyricist. And we have Trinity Gardner, who is our directing and developing intern.
Hi.
Hi. And then we have our panel today. Sounds so official. So we'll start with Nathan. Introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm Nathan Fossbinder. I was first in MTM's production of The Sound of Music as Friedrich, which I think is my true panel calling.
About that.
Well, we just did. With Karen.
About that production. Karen was in that too.
With Karen. So, and more recently, I wrote Hephaestus last year, and I am a writer mostly in New York in non-pandemic times. I went to graduate musical theater writing program at NYU Tisch and graduated in 2019.
And Nathan was sort of the first person to go through this development. You were the first person to go through this development process with us. And so Nathan has been in the hot seat before.
So very happy to pass it off to you two today.
And Rachel, tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Megan, for having me on this podcast. I'm really excited about it. My name is Rachel Lynette, and I'm a playwright and producer. I'm also the artistic director of the Rachel Lynette Theater Company, and I am currently based in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm very excited to talk about this new musical today.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what your theater company focuses on?
Our company is to produce brand new plays. When we say brand new, we mean never heard before, ever. They're usually first or second drafts of brand new plays, and the plays are usually socially engaged around gender, race, and sexuality. Right now, since we're in our first year and we're all virtual, we're using my plays because I don't have to pay myself royalties, but we're hoping to do a mixed season moving forward.
Very cool, and yay for original work in Madison. And then our last person is Tamara Brognano. Am I saying your last name right? I've known you forever, and I don't know that I've ever had to say your last name.
No, that's fine. It's one of those names. I have two of those names, in fact, because Tamara is also one of those names where most people usually have to ask, is it Tamara or Tamara?
Tamara Brognano.
Yeah. Oh, trust me, I've gotten that a lot. Yeah, so you said it perfectly. It's Tamara Brognano. I am the outreach coordinator for Four Seasons Theater, another local Madison company. I've been working in some capacity with Four Seasons for about 16 years, but officially as the outreach coordinator for the last, I think it's 11. The outreach that I manage is free programming in the community for underserved communities, folks who wouldn't necessarily have the means or the access to live musical theater. And Megan has very kindly done some outreach for me in past years, which is great. And I've also had the great joy of getting to perform with Megan in a few shows in the past. So it's a real treat to get to be part of this panel.
Well, we're really happy to have you. And Tamara, after our workshop production of Hephaestus a couple years ago, she sent this just very detailed, articulate, amazing email with all this feedback. And I know that that Nathan had a lot of fun with that and really appreciated that.
I hope it was okay.
Oh, it was awesome. It was the best. It was the most helpful thing ever. I think I have some stories that might come up today.
Oh, great.
Referencing it. So.
Oh, good.
So we sort of talked about our panelists. We sort of talked about some things, and you sent me an email of some things that struck you from the show. So I want to start with Nathan. You had mentioned, you know, how much you love the music and all of the things about it that were interesting to you. You had mentioned something really poignant that I really liked about how we characterize Nelly going forward. So you just want to first tell us what you liked, because that's always nice to hear.
There's absolutely so much to like here. I think since I'm going first, I get to be the first one. We'll all say it. So much of the music is haunting and beautiful. Tilly's song is just the most arresting thing that I've heard recently, sung brilliantly by Jennifer Kuckuck as Tilly. So I get to be the first to say that one. Karen, in the lead up podcast, in just talking about the show and hearing your excitement about it, I think the idea that struck me from what you were saying was kind of this, can we trust Nelly, and is there a ticking clock on her sanity, and how long do we have until that runs out? And just this whole format of having a podcast and having that much context going in gave me something to listen for. All the stuff in Within My Eyes, which is Nelly's first, you know, solo song, I just have things about like the feigning insanity and could it be I'm not faking, and I just found that to be some of the most interesting material of the entire show. Mm. Pulling that in more, I think, would just be so interesting. And how much time do we have until she's not faking? And because we do reference it throughout the show. I was a little surprised to hear at the end that she looks at her, like her insane alter ego, because the music stayed quite like chipper and we were barreling through, which was awesome. And then we hear in the next song, Face to Face with Self, we hear more of this eerie thing that's happening. And I was wondering if that could be pulled in earlier, so we start to hear the crazy start to happen. And then in Face to Face with Self, we get that gorgeous motif that stretches throughout the whole show.
The strange and wondrous evening.
Yes. Oh, absolutely stunning. And every time that comes in, it starts to mean something different, which is beautiful. We have the ticking clock of Tilly, which really, really adds stakes of this woman is so sick and we're running out of time with her. But I wonder what happens if we just, because Karen, you sounded so excited when you were talking about it. And I think your instincts are so right. if we talk more about how what happens after the ninth day if they don't come. That was like my big thing.
Thank you. That's great.
Nathan, you had said something I really liked in one of our like 2 a.m. conversations.
There are many.
about like who is our Nelly, or who is, you know, as opposed to sticking to what the book gives us, how do we extract more from her?
Totally. And it's something that I had to grapple with last year of like, okay, we have what the myths say about Hephaestus, but like those don't line up into my musical. That myth doesn't work, and I have to kind of throw it out. And I think part of why Tilly might be so captivating right now is I hear so much of your confined voice on her because there's less about her. So I hear more of the musical theater Tilly coming through and your version of it and getting to write on Jennifer. I think you can fictionalize your Nelly a little bit more. I think you can make her the Jennifer Karen Nelly, especially towards the beginning. Just that first Pulitzer scene, I kind of want him, this is very, in NYU we say suggestion land, or we're being prescriptive, so you don't have to take any of this. But I kind of wanted him to be meaner and her be more clever and show us why we should trust her on this journey. I think you've done an incredible job of being by the book, but you don't necessarily have to, and take your own notes from what you've done with Tilly.
Thank you for that.
Big Tilly awesome. Fan over here. Yeah. Team Tilly.
I think everybody's Team Tilly.
Tilly needs poor all Tilly. The help she can get.
It's a hard team to be on towards the end.
I know. Oh, poor thing. Great. So Tamara, you had said a similar thing about the Pulitzer scene, just wanting it to have more going on. That's the moment where everything changes for her. And you had mentioned wanting to see her work up to that moment where she says, I'm game.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to sort of echo on something that Nathan said, that, you know, you have this body of information about this real historical person. And I think in one of the podcasts, you guys talked about the fact that there's not real clarity on whether the idea for this story of going to this asylum was hers or whether it was Pulitzer's. And you made the choice that he was going to be the one to present the idea to her, which is, you know, you make that choice and then you make that work going forward in the story. Because of that choice, the thing that I was looking for, you know, looking at it from Nellie's perspective in that moment. So, you know, she's sort of brazened her way into the office. She's made this bold, you know, choice of, I'm just going to get in here and get this job because I am. You know, she has this short discussion with Pulitzer. He lays this option out there like, well, I could hire you if you are willing to do this absolutely crazy thing of having yourself committed to an asylum long enough to expose that, you know, the underbelly of this system that's supposed to be caring for people. And I think what I was kind of itching for at that moment was, okay, she gets this really wild suggestion, which will provide her with an in to what she wants, which is the job, but it's also dangerous, given her troubled past, something that might be challenging in a personal level, an emotional level, not just a professional mm-hmm. level. And I guess what I was hoping for there was some moment of, I mean, in my head, I'm seeing, you know, the scene set where all of a sudden we drop out the lighting on Pulitzer and it's just a special on her. And she has this moment of, you know, even possibly building on the music from the opening, but something that says, oh my gosh, can I do this? Or, wow, this is the greatest opportunity. Or, holy crap, I'm not positive I have the strength to do this. Or whatever that moment is that she has where she has to decide, am I going to do this or not? Because we as the audience already know she's going to do it, because that's, you know, it's the name of the play. When we got in the theater and we read the program, we know that she's going in the madhouse. But to be able to see her have that decision moment of, that decision moment might look a variety of ways, depending on how you guys decide to characterize it, whether it's a, can I do this? Or, hooray, I'm going to do this. Or, I'm worried I can't do this. Whatever that sort of emotional moment is, I really wanted to see that before, you know, she gives us that I'm game. And then we're into the story. But I wanted that decision point first, I think.
That's great. Thank you.
I think that's really interesting.
Especially after that great opening. I want to take a moment, too, to compliment the opening with all the images of the doors mm-hmm. closing on her face. I loved that. I thought it was such a great, strong opening for the story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that's a cool idea. Some little prelude to Within My Eyes.
Yeah. As soon as you said, like, oh, maybe it can reference some of the music at the beginning, I was really struck by that idea.
Like, not a reprise, really, but just sort of a continuation of that opening of, you know, musically and thematically.
Right.
But just to give her this decision moment of, okay, the door's been opened. Now what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Am I gonna walk through this door that I've been granted?
I like the idea of more of a lead up, just more of a lead up, and making that, your phrasing is perfect, a bigger decision moment.
Yeah.
Great. Tamara, you had also, this is the one where I think we've come back to more than once, just how to make this moment work as the face-to-face with self moment, because it's such a lovely song, and especially the strange and wondrous evening, you know, is so nice. You had some suggestions on that, if you want to speak about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, and I kind of want to preface this by saying I really want to honor the fact that you guys have created this beautiful, wonderful thing that you've put so much of your heart and soul and skill into. And I want to honor the fact that you guys are taking criticism from us right now, because I know that's not an easy thing to do.
Oh, again, I'm so happy to hand off the hot seat. Like, it is, it's not a fun place to be, but it you're awesome for being here and listening.
They signed up for this.
Yeah, it's part of the playwright's life.
Well, and I have to tell you, too, that as someone who, I mean, I've never written anything like this. I've written several musical reviews. And I know that when I wrote them, I was absolutely desperate for feedback. So I always try to be the person providing feedback that I would have wanted to have when I was doing this sort of writing. So I don't want anything that I say to feel like I'm dumping on something beautiful that you've created, because you've created something beautiful. So now that I've given that overly long intro, face-to-face with self, it sounded like from the podcast when you guys discussed it, that this was really a very precious moment for you guys in taking in the story of Nellie Bly and the story of her being, you know, moving through this portion of her life. This mm-hmm. evening when she spends this time sort of going, you know, going through the biography of her life and you know, living the history of her life in one night, in a way.
Yeah.
I think, though, as an audience member, and I guess I should say, when I listened to the musical, I listened to the musical twice through before I went and listened to your podcast talking about the making of. I think some of the questions I had about face-to-face with self kind of got answered in a way once I heard you guys talk about it. It's like, oh, okay. I completely get, you know, why this is in here and why it's important, because it's the central, you know, lovely nugget of Nellie Bly. I think what I was struggling with listening to it is I didn't get sort of Nellie's reason why she is doing this. Right. Mm-hmm. We understand historically that this was an important evening for her, and we understand that it was meaningful for her. But I think as an audience member, what I wasn't getting is, okay, she's made this decision that in order to present this semblance of insanity, she's not going to go to sleep at night, that falling asleep will somehow derail her being able to present this insane appearance to be able to get put into the asylum. So she makes this decision to stay up all night. I guess the bit I didn't get as an audience member is, why does she decide to kind of work through her history as a tool to stay awake?
Hmm.
What was the meaning she was looking for? What was the purpose she was looking for? The why of that action, I think, is what I was missing. Because without the why, to me as an audience member, I took it in as, okay, we're learning a lot about Nellie's backstory, but I'm not sure why I'm learning a lot about Nellie's backstory, and why is she doing this? If we were to experience this as a fully staged production rather than as a podcast, that might be answered just by the stage action, right? Because during this portion of the song, we're moving through the actions of her getting taken away and going to the court, and there's stage action that happens underneath this. I guess what I would ask for is to be more specific to us, the audience, with the why, with what is she getting out of this? Why is she doing this?
And that might be, I haven't read the book in a couple of years, but does she say, or is that just something she decides to do?
She doesn't really say, and I think it to me, it always read to me as so now she's decided to do this, and, well, how do you pass the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's no TV, there's no radio, it's 1887. She journals a little bit. Yeah. So... So she kind of turns on the TV in her mind, I guess.
Yeah. I also think something that has always struck me when I'm reading about Nellie is just like the delight she takes in details. And the reason that moment I think struck both Karen and I so strongly is at the end, she says it was one of the most wonderful nights of her existence to just sit and live through her whole life again. And that just seemed like such an interesting thing to me that she took so much joy out of that. And that, I mean, I feel like a lot of people like, oh, I gotta sit here all night. Ugh, gosh, you know, she really enjoyed it. I like what you said about giving it more like specificity and purpose. To me, the why is also just like Nellie's character as someone who just finds the human mind interesting, I think, even her own.
Kind of building on something that Nathan said, actually, one way that you might want to think about it is, you know, that may be the reason that Nellie really did it, that she has the sense of joy, that she is someone who loves, you know, the details of a narrative, but that dramatically it might work to layer on an element of, is my past such that I'm going to be able to survive this? Does my past mean that I'm going to tip over into insanity?
Mm-hmm.
Are there elements in my history that mean on some level I might actually belong there?
Yeah.
Not just the history as a source of, here's how I'm going to get through this night, and I'm going to take great pleasure in getting through this night by going through my history, but using it somehow to advance this character arc of her taking on this job and then having to, like Nathan said, you know, is there a point at which I'm no longer going to be sane? Is there a point at which this is going to be more than I can manage?
So one more like critique preface that I learned that like got me through Hephaestus. One of my teachers said, if multiple people have their red pens on the same area, mark that down. And then what they say from there, take it or leave it. But when multiple people circle the same thing, in Tamara, that's actually the story, is like you and someone else in Hephaestus stood up and said exactly opposite things. But I was like, okay, but there's a problem. The way that I was putting it was like, I was missing her feeling about her past. And like, I got what had happened, but I didn't really then see why it was what she was going to use to make her crazy. And I like that TV of the mind idea. I was kind of wondering, Jennifer, the Nellie Blys that come in at the end of the show, I was just wondering if those could swirl in her head too, as she's, as we have this whole thing of shedding her name and becoming this other person. That came to mind. Once we get to the women's sphere section of the song, it really feels like her Elphaba Unlimited moment, where we get what this whole thing is about and it all falls away. And that's why she's here. And I think if it's set up as, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And then we get to women's sphere, I think it can be even bigger and more transformative. Oh, and then just because you have this whole moment in Act Two about why are we all here? We're all here because of men. Her first two verses of that song are about the crappy men in her life.
Mm.
So I think you've set yourself up for like some great motivic work. Yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, I did all that already. I just have to know I did it.
Yeah. Thank you, both of you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick little break while I thank a sponsor, and then Rachel and Trinity, we're going to hear from you guys when we return. So I want to say a very special thank you to our sponsor, TDS Custom Construction. I met the owner a few years ago when I was working for the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation. His name is Sam Breidenbach. They do beautiful work all across the city. And they also, one thing that I think is cool about them is if you have an older house or a house with something weird going on that's maybe that cannot necessarily be solved by a lot of people, that do remodeling, TDS can probably fix it for you. And really just outstanding customer service. Couldn't be nicer. They've won tons of awards. All you have to do is check out their website at tdscustomconstruction.com to see some of the amazing work that they've done. They are an incredible local business, and they've been supporting Music Theater of Madison for several years. And so we just want to say a really big thank you to them, and I encourage you to look them up for any of your home remodeling needs or construction needs. If you're looking at building a new house, they are very worthy of your business and a great local organization to support. So again, it's tdscustomconstruction.com, and look them up if you're in need of some custom construction or remodeling. And thank you to them. So I want to go to something Rachel said, and also which ties in a little bit with something Nathan said as well. Rachel, you had mentioned, actually, I don't think you mentioned the doctors. You just mentioned the nurses, but Nathan mentioned the doctors as well. And so tell me a little bit about what you would like to see from, we'll start with Rachel, from the nurses.
Yeah, I was really drawn into the story. I love a story that's not feels like a sneaky ensemble piece. And to me, this feels like it's sneakily an ensemble piece, even though we have that focus character of Nellie. And for the nurses, I really wanted to see them fleshed out in a way where they weren't just the like specific villainous. I don't know how to say it. Like, it felt like I am someone who likes to know the why of like what's going on with the nurses. Like, we learn a lot about that they're not, some of them aren't technically nurses, and that they are prisoners. And especially looking at a 2020 world, I kind of wanted to know like what's driving them. This is one extreme. Like, I'm gonna name a couple extremes. Is it like just sociopathy and like they were the worst prisoners, and this is a way that they get to like exercise those desires? Is it that they're also trapped? Even as I was listening to it, I saw them as people who were also victims of this broken system and also trapped within this world and also kind of stuck and just taking the power that they could. I think that that's something that really resonates with women, especially pre-suffrage, where it was, I'm going to take the power that I can because I'm also being oppressed. And so I kind of wanted to see a bit more from the nurses of just like where they were and a little bit of more of understanding for their motives. I was missing that. And again, like, I loved it. I loved it so much. And that's why this is such a, to me, this is such like a nitpicky comment, because like I had a hard time finding something broader. But yeah, I definitely wanted, I don't know, maybe I'm secretly sexist. I did not care that much about the doctors. I was just like, I don't care about them. But the nurses, I definitely was like, I need to know more about the nurses. I need to know what's driving them and what's behind their motivations, especially since some of them like do good things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, since we have nurse McCartan, who is sort of, it seems like, just trying to hang on to the gig, and then you have Nurse Group, who is just awful. And like you said, why is she like that? What happened to her, you know? So I think that's really interesting. And in talking about the doctors, Nathan, you had mentioned how you felt about the doctors and what you wanted to see there.
Well, on my second listen, I found it really interesting them being mentioned as like infants at one point, and just how much that speaks to the power dynamic. I agree completely with you, Rachel. Like, the men in this story are not the focus, nor should they be. They're just the doctors kind of being so young and yet so powerful. I was getting an almost like an ultimate villain from them, that then I'd like to feel them separated from the nurses. And like, how do the women see them? Do we maybe get a song about what we think the doctors do in their spare time? There's that scene where the women are talking about like, oh, they're babies, they're whatever. And to Rachel's point about why are the nurses there, there's that three-pronged relationship of we have the doctor and the nurse and Nellie. And at least in the way that I heard it in this iteration, the nurse was happy to be flirting and was interested in that. But what happens if perhaps she's playing him? Like, there's just a lot to be done. And right now I was kind of getting the nurses and the doctors at the same level as one united front. And I think there's a lot to be played with there.
Awesome. I want to end with a question I'd like us all to talk about. And this came out of Rachel's comments as well. Having 10 days in a madhouse in the name, just by nature, if I was understanding you correctly, sort of lowers the stakes that we know she's getting out. And this is something we've kind of dealt with from the beginning. But do you want to talk about that a little bit, Rachel? And then I want to get everybody's take on that.
Yeah, it's tricky because I know the book is also called 10 Days in a Madhouse, And I know that you want to be respectful to the book. But for me, since so much emphasis was on the days specifically, like the word days repeats itself a lot, I was like, well, okay, what's going to happen when we get to 10 days? And so it just, the stakes of whether or not she'd really lose her sanity, for me, I was like, well, I know that she's not, because it's only called 10. It's not called 30 days. It's not called. And so I wondered, like, I've been thinking about this since I listened to it, and then I tried to listen to it again today to see how I felt about it. And I wonder if instead of the repetition, I know that for storytelling and for narrative reasons, we do need to track the days, but it gets so repetitive that that becomes my focus, where I'm like, okay, they said this is the fifth day a couple times, and now I know I'm on day 5. And I wonder if instead the focus can be on her sanity more. I don't know, like a sanity check-in versus a day check-in would work better for me, because then I think it'd be good to kind of lose track of what day it is, honestly, for the audience. Instead of us being so aware, like, oh, it's day 5 or oh, it's day 3, it's like, wait, which day is it? Would help me raise the stakes a bit more. But knowing what day it was, I was like, okay, well, I know this is not going to happen. And that took away the stakes a bit for me. But I think there are ways to play with that. And really interesting ways. I would love the idea if I didn't know what day it was anymore. And that is definitely, to say something Nathan said, that is definitely a heavy prescription. Please, that's what we like to call it, the bad idea. So that's the bad idea. I know you'll come up with a good idea.
I like that idea. I really like that a lot. I think that sort of a more dreamy things flowing together. Because Karen, you had said, you know, it says in the script, you want everything to flow very quickly. Like, I don't imagine this as being a piece that has, you know, blackout, scene change, you know, everything sort of comes together very easily. So I think that would go in with what Rachel said pretty smoothly.
Well, can I give the counter argument?
Sure.
I'll be the devil's advocate. I think, Rachel, you said that this is truly an ensemble piece, right? Even though, you know, the title gives us sort of the program gives us Nellie's face on the cover, that it's really an ensemble story with lots of characters. But as the audience, our entry into that ensemble is Nellie, right? She's the person whose viewpoint we're viewing the story through. And that, to me, that the different devices used throughout to name off the days kind of gave me an anchor point, like, oh, okay, good. We're at 9. We're almost done. We're almost out, you know, that especially, and maybe that's just because of the world that we're in right now, and that this has been an absolutely craptacular week. And I needed that anchor point to be able to say, okay, we're almost out of the madhouse. We're going to be fine. That maybe in a different time, I wouldn't need that as much. I don't know.
That's interesting.
And I'm going to be so unhelpful and hit right in the middle that I think I really agree with Rachel, really agree with Tamara. My favorite thing is the response to Nellie saying, we've been here 9 days. And someone says, I've been here 2 years. I think that might be a way to kind of have your cake and eat it too, of like, your 9 days is it, like, what are days at this point? I think if I had to choose, I'd lean Rachel. I love that response of like, oh, count for yourself, you'll lose eventually.
I also think that, like, just to quickly clarify, so I think Tamara and I want different things, but that's okay. That's what's fun about notes, and you get to, like you can be in the middle. Is it maybe if she says it's day 7 and it's really day 5? Like, just where we can kind of see the losing of the track and kind of seeing the slipping of sanity, and then we still get the number of days, but we can see that it's hard to keep track, you know? So yeah, I just wanted something to kind of to reflect the loss of sanity or the question of that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
It's really striking because when Rachel gave her first comment about it, I immediately thought of like life in the pandemic, where it's like, what is time anymore? But then Tamara said, that's why I liked having the the counter. I think it makes sense. Like, you would start to lose track once you're in there. In the beginning, maybe you would really know, like, all right, it's day 1, it's day 2, day 3. But by the end, it's so monotonous and it's such a terrible place to be that you might just not really fully know what day it is anymore.
Well, particularly since you kind of set it up as a device of following time, you know, early on in that, you know, we're naming which day it is. That then, Rachel, I see how that gives a lot more power than if we're just losing the thread of what day it is as we go further into this. That device of keeping us anchored goes away. I yeah. See, now I'm agreeing with you, Rachel. my need to be tethered should not overweigh the need for dramatic tension.
Well, in the world that you're currently in, the way that you view things changes, you know. We certainly didn't think this was going to be the situation when we decided to do a show about being in a madhouse for 10 days, you know.
Probably kind of a prescient topic, actually, really. Dealing with the passage of time and your sanity.
Yeah, but it's hitting people very differently.
Linking it to quarantine, I think I clocked that Nelly can still count the days because she believes she's going to get out. And that's the difference between her and the other women.
But she doesn't know necessarily that she's going to, I mean, they didn't really give her much information about when she was going to get out either.
She's kind of the only one with a good reason to still hope.
Yeah.
At least that was my interpretation.
Well, I want to talk to Trinity a little bit. I want to talk about some other ways that we can raise the stakes, because that has just always been, you know, the question here. And with what we were just talking about, it's 10 days. Even if we were to change the name or something, like, we know she gets out because she wrote this book. What are, and maybe in performance, in the writing, some ways that we can raise the stakes more? Are there things we should change? And this can be for anybody, but I do want to get Trinity because she hasn't said anything yet. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I kind of really agree with Nathan. I think that if you take one side and Nelly is recalling the days, then you should also have the other women and how they're stuck there and they have no way to get out. And so finding that balance that Nelly has hope, but the rest of them don't, and making sure that that comes across, like, deeply.
What about characterization for you? I mean, we did add, you know, we added Pauline for this iteration, and we changed Mrs. Fox to Mrs. Freeman, and that sort of gives another level. And I don't know, to me, I've mentioned this before, American Horror Story Asylum inspires me a little bit, just because it is, well, first of all, it is very loosely based on Nellie Bly, but also because of, it's scary, you know. She sees people going insane and responding to, but because of the response to what's happening in there. So what do you think, Trinity, in terms of characterizations or character work that we could do?
I think there's a lot to be had. It was really hard for the actors to play off of each other when they're not in person seeing themselves face to face. I mean, for myself, I'm in a play right now and I'm like, well, this is super hard to do it over a camera and not being in person. And so I think that's the biggest thing is that we're missing right now is the characterization, the actor's sense of space, and how they interact with each other. And so that's a lot of work to be had for everybody.
Yeah.
If I can add to that, actually, I think one of the challenges of kind of taking in a musical in this way, of being only able to listen to the audio aspect and not to have all the visual input, is that we're asking the audio, the words and the music, to do all of the heavy lifting, because we don't have that actor's body giving us all that additional information that we would normally have, that actor's face giving us all that additional information, the lighting design, the set, all the other elements that would help do this lifting for you aren't there to help increase that dramatic tension.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I think about how things will be staged and what people will be wearing and how much more we can do when we can feel the atmosphere in terms of how big a space it is, but how crowded a space it is. I think that will give us a lot of information. Is there anything else anybody wants to address in terms of how to just raise the stakes in this story? Like I said, we know she's going to get out, but how can we question if she's going to get out, or how can we question what's going on around her? Maybe something with one of the other characters.
First of all, I just want to say, to Tamara and Trinity's point, like, the ambiance that has been created in this medium through just the production quality was absolutely stunning. I hadn't heard a musical on a podcast before, and all that you were able to show us is absolutely phenomenal. And Jennifer, I'm going to ask you a mean composer question. What's the state of underscore right now? Which is, like, the worst thing to ask, because Hephaestus for me was like running down to Mark 4 days before opening and be like, no, play these four bars. Trinity is nodding right now. Trinity being like, no, it should be something different. Like, you're right. Because this felt like, and there, I realized in my second listen, there were sound effects, like just ambient noise, and those were really helping. I described it to Megan as like very dreamy and spooky yet soothing music. And any time that you had the women humming or doing something in the background, I was like, this is beautifully terrible. I hate it so much in a good way. All of that to say, I was craving more wall-to-wall sound once we reached a place where it was all walls. But where are you with that?
The answer to that question is that I am nowhere.
Great. Not the right answer at this point.
Yeah, I think, for me, most of my composing before this, having been like just writing individual songs, that wasn't a top priority, I guess.
Absolutely.
Early in the process.
Correct answer.
I love what you said about like a wall of sound, kind of, because we talk about like how to make it feel crowded. And sometimes the way you can make something feel crowded without adding more physical crowding is noise, right? So to have some more sound, and I am planning to use strings in the orchestration, so I can see that being a really easy way to add some, as you put it, what, dreamy and spooky and soothing sounds into the scenes.
I was wondering in the food dialogue section about like, is there perhaps, again, Team Tilly, I'm not even gonna apologize for it, is there perhaps a Tilly motif that, and I think you could play with that, like waxing and waning as she does. That's, as Rachel just said, like that's the bad idea, you'll figure it out. But I think that might just be a way to tie all of the women together but again, you're exactly right for not having done that yet. All the gods know I was not there at this point for Hephaestus, so.
Something I thought about in regards to raising the stakes, and like it goes to something I think it was Nathan that said about giving yourself permission to fictionalize the story a little bit more in order to raise the stakes. And so again, this is the bad idea. If Pulitzer was less supportive and she did this on her own anyway, then that definitely raises the stakes for me, because then it's like she's doing something completely... no one, she's got no permission, she's just going in, and then I don't know she's gonna get out. Like, I think that like something like that, which definitely blesses with history, but it raises the stakes, short of like changing the title, which don't do that, but just that's what I needed, is I needed a little bit more, like that's what I was saying, losing track of the day, seeing her mental state, but also like, what if she didn't have permission? That then would raise the stakes for me. What if like, these are all, again, these are bad ideas. What if she was offered a chance out before the 10 days and she has to consider whether or not she's going to take it? Like, I just kind of wanted to see a struggle a bit more. And so I think the stakes get raised with, I always say stakes are raised with options and with rebellions are the two things that I say. So just like doing something you're not supposed to will always raise the stakes, even personally. I've learned in my personal life. So yeah, that's just an idea for raising the stakes.
Rachel's bad ideas are very good ideas.
I think you're all fairly smart, I would say. Well, this has been wonderful, and I wish we could talk for like 7 hours, but I won't do that to you. Does anyone, before we adjourn, have anything you would like to add as we forge ahead with this thing and hopefully can perform it next summer? Fingers crossed. Tamara.
I would love to add some of the things that I really loved, which, I mean, we gave you some of the sticky spots that might need some more attention, but some of the stuff that we absolutely loved, I think would be really nice to finish with. The duet, the ribbons and skirts in the second act. Loved. Ugh. And Sarah's two comedic numbers, one in each act. Thank you for those. Wonderful. Because, you know, even the darkest story needs those moments of lift. Erica, who's the actress who did that part, is, you know, she's fantastic. She, you know, she can make everything funny. But those songs were brilliant. And the other one I wanted to say kudos again was in the Too Many Stories. The layering of the women's voices, Jennifer, was just just gorgeous. Just such great writing. So, yay you.
Ditto that one. Oh, and just in Tilly's song, I kind of said it before, but the changing the motif to sleeping being a good thing, like, caught my jaw on the floor. That that's just a gorgeous piece of writing.
I'll just say I think we have a lot more we can do with Tilly, because I think that people just, you just grab onto her and you feel bad for her. That last moment where she comes out and sings Fix Your Eyes on Me in the finale. I mean, I think that we just want so much for her. And that song, the first time Jennifer sent me a demo of that song, I clutched my invisible pearls. I was just so like, wow. And I listened to it like 6,000 more times. So there are so many moments like that that you guys have done. And I can't wait to see where this goes. God, I hope we get to do it live next year. Please, oh, please, oh, please. Anyway, but if it's not next year, we will do it live when it is safe to do it live. It will happen, I promise. Well, I just want to say a huge thank you to our panelists. Sounds so official. Feedback givers.
Fans, Nathan, of the show.
Fans, our fans, our groupies, Nathan Fossbinder, Rachel Lynette, and Tamara Brognano. Tamara Brognano, yes. As well as to our wonderful assistant director, Trinity Gardner, and our composer and co-lyricist, Jennifer Hedstrom, and book writer and co-lyricist, Karen Sari. Thank you all for listening, and thank you all for your feedback. And if you, our listeners, would like to give us feedback, email us, use the feedback form on our website. You don't have to be an expert. It's what struck you and what moved you and what you were craving more of. And that's all we were looking for from you. So thank you guys very much for being here. We'll see you soon.
This will need to be the story of me.